Welcome back to 1570 AM WNST, home of the Dennis Colazzo Show. Our next guest is our very own Nestor J. Aparicio. Nestor, welcome in.
Hey, I like the music there, you know, like the same music, like the same bands, like the same clothes, you know.
Well, I have inside intel on what you like in the form of my super fly producer and co-host, Mr. Pete DeLutis.
Well, you know, music makes the world go around, especially in the middle of a plague, right? It's one thing we can put some music on and change the state of our mind at any point. And I'm just hoping that when you and I get together the next time, we're not talking about a late season Raven loss in Cleveland to the upstart. We can't let the Browns get their 10th victory over us, can we?
It is possible. The odds makers don't think so, but that ball bounces funny. And in this week-to-week league, right, the Washington football team takes down the undefeated Steelers, the Patriots blank 45-0.
What's the spread this week? We got a spread? I'm not a gambler. What's
spread?
The spread?
It's well, the Ravens are favored. First of all, the game started out as pick'em, but now it's moved. The line has moved to favor the Ravens by 1.5, just so you know.
Well, I mean, people have seen Cleveland play for 21 years, right? I mean, you know, it's hard to say I like Cleveland no matter what. You know, they've had their own problems. I've had great guests this week. You can go out to BaltimorePositive.com and check out Daryl Ryder from Cleveland and my pal Scott Petrak and Munch Bishop, amongst others. I actually caught up with two former Ravens this week who have Cleveland roots. Kim Herring. Raised in Solon, you know, just outside of Cleveland, went to Penn State. He is
right,
in the he's in the biosecurity business with Clear. So we talked about contact tracing and different stuff and football, of course, and tackling Lamar. Also had Dave Zastidel on, who had COVID a few weeks ago and has 5 children and gave me a big story on him. You know, I've gone out there this week to try to get some insight into this because everybody I had on in September, whether it was Michael Regei, you know, all the beat writers around the team, nobody was high on the Browns. I mean, they had watched them play last year. They didn't get a chance to practice. They didn't get a chance to have preseason game. And none of that happened in August. So the conversations about them the first week of September are far different than the conversations now. And again, this is a road game, but it's not a road game, right? Like the way we would traditionally know it. And the thing that I've talked so much. Dennis, have you ever been to Cleveland for a game?
I have never been to Cleveland for anything. I haven't heard many great things about Cleveland. I know you have, of course you have in your lifetime.
I love Cleveland. So
really?
I still have my flight for Monday night to go to Cleveland. I haven't canceled it yet. I'm not going. I mean, I'm just not going. My wife's away with her family for a few weeks to try to enjoy the holiday. And she quarantining and, you know, got tested, all that stuff. I don't think I'm, you know, up for an empty stadium in Cleveland with COVID being where it is and no access to the players. And I don't say I've gotten comfortable on my couch. I know you and I've had this conversation many times about being more comfortable. I can't wait to go to Las Vegas next year, to go to Cleveland next year, to go to Pittsburgh next year. But just where we are in the world, I'm not going. And I'm really like sort of, there's a reason I haven't canceled the flight, right? I don't have any problem canceling my flight for New England or Indianapolis. This one I've kind of held on to because the game feels significant, right? I mean, the game feels like it's going to be a good game. So for that, it would be worth my time. But, you know, one of the weird things about it is I've fallen in love with a couple little restaurants out in Cleveland, and I get my little my Michael Simon barbecue, and, you know, they have a really nice little ale house where I try some of the, I've had a white stout there. You know, I like beer, so, a beer or two, moderation and everything. You know, there's even the dark ice cream I go moderation on. But there's a great, great little cafe in a little town called Tremont. Tremont's like sort of the next town over from where the Christmas Story house is. And, last year I didn't get a car. And I was in downtown Cleveland. And when did we play them last year? But right around this time, right? Maybe right before Christmas?
Yeah, it was.
It was a week before
time, right?
Christmas, I think, right?
Yeah.
So the Christmas Story house, I mean, you know about my leg lamp, right? I mean, you always see the leg lamp on my set. So I woke up early on game day And this restaurant, it's a kind of a Guy Fieri place. It's not mob, but it's really good. You know, it's, I've been there the last 5 years I've gone every year, and it's just a really, really good place. A place that I have to spend $15 on the pastries and put them in a box and bring them home to my wife because they're that good. You know, muffins and scones. It's just an amazing place. It's so good you can't believe it's in Cleveland.
Yeah, the great part about Cleveland is, you know, when's the last time they had a meaningful game in that town? And it's a shame the fans can't come out and enjoy it and then be rabid and root their team on and miss out on all that fun and festivities.
Well, you know, I wound up going to this restaurant and I wanted to see how far the Christmas Story House was, and it said it was like 2.3 miles. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to walk it. So I wound up walking through Cleveland for, I don't know, an hour and 15 minutes on a brisk 40 degree morning. I was getting my exercise in. You know how you take walks in the woods, right? I mean, you go fishing, right? You do all this stuff. I walked in Cleveland is what I did a year ago. So, yeah, these road trips for me, they are a clearing of my head. You know, I've been in the same place at the same time for a long time here. It's really weird for a guy with a vagabond heart to not be going to these games. So I know that when I felt this way about New England, I sat here, I didn't go, I didn't give it a second thought, and then when the television broadcast began, even when it was raining there, it was awful, I'm like, yeah, God, I belong there, you know what I mean? It just feels like where I belong. Kind of like you at Coons Ford Street Boulevard on like a Black Friday or on a sale, you know, President's Day. Whatever the big days are, it feels like it's where you belong. So I guess that's why I haven't canceled my flight on Monday night. You know, I sort of want to go through my Cleveland routine. David Modell, he and I were very close. I think you know that in retrospect.
Sure.
I once said to David, and you know, David didn't drink, but I've been known to have a few beverages out at dinner. And we were out one night, he and his wife and me and my wife, and we were at the Crush over Belvedere Square, and we were having a really nice meal. And I kind of got, you know, kind of got to an intimate moment. I said to him, I said, Dave, I'm going to Cleveland for the game this year. I know you'll never go back to Cleveland, but if you went back to Cleveland for one thing, what would it be? And David really had a lot of angst about Cleveland, as I'm sure you could imagine, the death threats and all that, right?
Sure.
So David said to me, I would fly back. I would go to Little Italy in Cleveland. I would get a Mama Santa pizza. No, I would get two pizzas. I would go back to the airport, and I would fly back, and I would eat those pizzas.
There you go.
So the next time we went to Cleveland, and David was still alive then, we went to Mama Santa's and had pizza and sent him pictures and goofed, and, you know, he was still alive. We had some fun with it. But, I've had some moments in Cleveland. I was there when we took the team. I was in the square at 4th and Lakewood on the morning that the Bengals played the Browns in the last, you know, the Belichick Browns before the team moved, when they were ripping the stands. I was at the game that day. I met Kevin Burns for the first time in my life that day. And I remember seeing the mayor up on a stump saying, the team, the colors, the name, and the fans were the team, the colors, the name. You know, you've seen political things. I was also in Cleveland, whatever year Barack Obama won the presidency. I guess that's 2008. Doing the math right. The Ravens played. You played Bobby Jean for me. The Ravens played the Browns on the same day when Bruce Springsteen did a free concert for Barack Obama in the public square in Cleveland. And we, you know, the game was a 1 o'clock game. And I think Springsteen was playing at like 6 o'clock, 6 o'clock maybe. And before the game at 10 in the morning, there were, you know, 70,000 people downtown. When the game ended, there were 370,000 people downtown.
No, that's
video of walking through Cleveland and hearing Springsteen play the song Working on a Dream. And we were nowhere near Springsteen because there was just too many people. Google that if you ever get a chance to see what it looked like in downtown. I've never seen more people. Maybe the Stones in Rio.
Yeah,
so
but Cleveland, you know,
moments in Cleveland.
You've been downtown there, though, from what I gather from Cleveland, a blue-collar town, much like Baltimore and whatnot. There's some parallels and similarities between the towns, I would think.
Oh, my God, yes. And, you know, and the Indians have some plight going on right now. We don't have LeBron James, though. You know, we don't have that. We didn't win an NBA championship. But I'll say this. The reason I even get into the storytelling on this is that if I were to go out there, it would be a sad tale to tell. You know, going to the stadium on a night when they're finally good. You know, everybody I've talked to in Cleveland this week, I mean, Zastel's beside himself. He's like, look, I played for the Browns, and I've been here, you know, my whole life. He's like, I've never seen more people more excited about the Browns. And everybody, I mean, all my guests that have been on for all these years, Reg and all his guests, I had all of them on after LeBron won, you know, a couple years ago. And they all did the parade. All their kids did the parade. I mean, Cleveland never had a parade. You know, Cleveland, right? Like, they never in their lifetime, nobody there had ever been to a parade of any kind, right? So they all came on, and they all said, you know, the LeBron, it was great. It was good. And if the Indians win, it'll be great. But if the Browns ever win, oh, my God, you know. And I've been hearing that. I mean, the first time I was ever in Cleveland, then I saw the John Elway drive game. That poster, the program from that game is right outside the WNSD studio. It's in the studio. I found it the other day rummaging through some stuff. So my first trip to Cleveland was for the Elway drive game. I've been going every year for 21 years now. They got the team back in 99 since Tim Couch. And this is going to be weird on Monday night, but I'll tell you what, it's going to be a great football game. I mean, I think this is a really good test for the Ravens to find out whether they're a January team or not. I mean, you can't hold your water against Cleveland on Monday night. I'm not holding that a lot of hope that they're going to go beat Buffalo, Kansas City, and Pittsburgh back-to-back-to-back in January. But this would give me the kind of confidence that maybe we had back in September about the team.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's a big game for both teams. Significant playoff implications. And, of course, the national media always spins it as the old Browns versus the new Browns.
Yeah, you know, national media, schmedia, scoreboard says everything. Like, let's look at the last 21 years. And again, Dan, go watch poor Daryl Ryder from the Fan in Cleveland. Like, Daryl and I have been friends for 15 years, and he comes on twice a year, sometimes three, four times a year when we play the Indians or whatnot, or when LeBron wins a championship or whatever, or when they're on Hard Knocks, and I just want to make fun of Cleveland. Cleveland people, you know. So this time around, you know, I got him on, and it's something to see a little pep in his step, especially for a poor SOB that has covered the team. Do you know how many head coaches he's asked questions to? Do you know how many times he's had to come on my show and talk about the 2-9 Browns in December? Yeah. Literally, right?
Well, let me ask you this. Speaking of poor, you know, souls there in Cleveland, that guy, what's his name? Tony Grossi, the one that made it his life's mission to keep Art Modell out of the Hall of Fame. Do you ever talk to him?
Yeah, I don't speak to him. So you know what's really interesting about him? I later learned he was Peter King's college roommate. I never knew that, and I didn't know they were life or friends. Tony Grossi, I see him, you know, Mary Kay Cabot, I'm very fond of, by the way, she's been a long, long time beat writer. She was the beat writer when Art left. And a professional. I don't feel that way about Grossi. I feel like if I ever sat with him, if he ever came on the show, I would really have, you know, I would take him to task, and I don't think he would like it. He's not that kind of personality. You know, he's not the kind of guy. I mean, there's a reason he's never come on my show over 22 years and debated me about it. And I wouldn't be a jerk. You know, I would say, dude, what's your deal? What's your deal?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
What's your deal? And he would say to me, would you let Bob Irsay into the Hall of Fame? And I'm like, you know, I sat on a veranda with Jimmy Irsay a couple of times now. I mean, I've had long conversations with Jim Irsay on three different occasions, one on videotape that I've never shown anyone. He sat with me for an hour in Orlando at the owners' meetings in 2009, and we had a wonderful conversation. And then we were together at an owners' meeting at a cocktail party one night, and we talked about music for a half an hour. Like, we talked about the Beatles. What Michael Silver did with him, you heard what he's doing this week, right, Jim Irsay?
No, I have not.
He owns all of the John Lennon memorabilia and pianos and guitars. He's going to build a museum with all of this rock memorabilia that he's amassed. Huh. He's got Dylan manuscripts and like really serious, serious Rock and Roll Hall of Fame kind of stuff that he has bought at charity auctions, you know, various stuff throughout his life. You go check it out. Michael Silver talked in this week. Yeah. He's a big music guy. So what I'm saying to you is, and I talked to you about this when we played the Super Bowl there, you know, this is the time for thanks and giving and forgiveness and bringing people together. I've been talking all day long, Dan, with the Chamber of Commerce, Nancy Hafford and Towson. We had the Teal on from the Catonsville Chamber of Commerce, just talking about Baltimore and this, what we're going through now with the mayor and what the counties are going through and shutting down restaurants and curbside and from our friends. And I went over to Amici's at the Pier Point last night. I just want to make sure everybody's taking care of everybody. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's a time to be thinking like forward and not worrying about March 28th, 1984. And I remember it. I remember it. But, you know, let's go beat Cleveland on Monday night and have a good football game and move on. And I don't like Baker Mayfield, so it's fun for me to root against him, you know?
But great stuff. Nestor, keep doing great things. I really appreciate the time.
Tonka Brothers, get that ice cream!
Oh, yeah. You taught me how to eat it one lick at a time. There he goes. Nestor J. Aparicio here at 1570 AM WNST. We'll take a quick break.